Hello, and welcome to the She Flourishes podcast, a weekly soul-stirring conversation that lifts you out of the funk and into the flourishing life so you can live life as the best version of you. I'm your host, Brenda Jasmine. For the past 11 years, I've been coaching women and leading personal development workshops as a speaker and mindset coach. She Flourishes is an extension of those workshops and conversations and is designed to help you create the flourishing life that you were meant to live. Let's get started. Hello and welcome to the She Flourishes podcast. Today is a very special day. We are recording this episode on the UN-sanctioned International Day of Happiness. And I cannot think of a better guest to have a conversation with on the show today than our guest today. And his name is Louis Aloro. And Louis, let me tell you a little bit about Louis before we dive right in and talk about what he's here to talk with us about today. Louis is a social entrepreneur creating and facilitating evidence-based learning experience, which help teams, workplaces, and communities dig deeper and reach higher. He's one of the first 100 people in the world to earn a master's in applied positive psychology from the University of Pennsylvania. And since 2008, Louis has trained and certified thousands of people leaders and workplaces in applied positive psychology and well-being science. Louis brings a pracademic lens to his practice and an inspiringly calm and positive spirit to his clients through his high-touch facilitation, training, and coaching. Louis is also a co-creator at the Well-Being Lab and a senior fellow at the Center for the Advancement of Well-Being. So welcome to the show, Louis.
Thank you, Brenda. Nice to be here.
It's so great to have you here. And I have wanted you to come on the show for a really long time now. And I only just had a chance to, we got connected. We had met like years ago. And I was, you know, I wanted to find the right time to bring you on the show because I know that you have so much to offer in the world of positive psychology. And we met, I think the first time we met was at a positive education conference in Toronto. And I remember, so for those of you that aren't in the positive psychology world, Louis Aloro is a bit of a rock star. You know, when he goes to these conferences, you know, people want to talk to him. And so I remember like trying to find a moment to meet Louis and to talk to you. And it was just so great. I remember feeling really connected and just you're the type, Louis is the type of person who, when you talk to him, he's very present and you feel like you're the only person he's talking to. You really have that. You really walk the talk, Louis. And so I remember feeling that in our first encounter back in Toronto, those number of years ago.
Oh, yeah. Those days of the live CPPA conferences.
Right. I know. I miss those. I really do. And so today is the International Day of Happiness and the theme for this year. It's so great. Every year they choose a theme and, you know, people think like, oh, it's like, is this like National Donut Day or something? No, it's not. It's a UN sanctioned event. It's legit. And it's all about, so this year being happier together, the whole idea is to remind us that lasting happiness comes from feeling connected to others and being part of something bigger. And the work that Louis does in the world, a lot of it is around community well-being. And so I just thought, how perfect for us to be able to talk about being happier together, like being together in community. You're just the perfect person to talk about that today. So I think this just worked out beautifully. And I'm so, so appreciative of you taking the time to be with us here all the way from, I think, are you in California?
Yes, Los Angeles, California. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I'm here in Ottawa today. So we are being really international when it comes to happiness. So Louis,
North American international.
Yes, at least the Western. Yeah, that's true. That's true. So Louis, maybe we can start by, maybe you can tell me a little bit about like, So when I first got to know you, I know you were really into talking about, you know, social emotional leadership. And I think, you know, talking about community well-being isn't that, you know, it's all kind of part and parcel. It's not that far off, I think, you know, when we first met. But maybe you can even just say, what does community well-being even mean to you? Like, how would you describe that? Because we talk a lot about here on the podcast about, you know, how we can flourish as individuals. And I have to be honest, I probably haven't talked a lot about community well-being. So can you describe mm-hmm. for us what it means to you?
Well, it's more than the aggregate of this of the individual level well-being added together. So community well-being involves that personal piece, right? Where like my practices, habits, and rituals and yours around your self-care is important, but it's not the only thing that's important for the community to be well. For the community to be well, there needs to be a foundation of safety. There needs to be a foundation of support, equity for all people, you know, and not just some people. Like foundationally in a community, there's things that are in place that then support the well-being of the community, like those individual level self-care and well-being approaches that individuals have, families taken together can have, schools, neighborhoods, even in the more industrial parts of communities where people gather for work and other ways of life together. So there's a collective sense that, you know, in this place we are taking care of each other. So I like the like kind of a distinction between self-care and probably a lot of what you talk about on this podcast, and then other care. How are we taking care of each other, looking out for each other? And that was the fundamental kind of gist of social emotional leadership, is the people within our community networks, our workplace networks, our school networks. They're the people who do look out for the well-being of other people. They're the people who do ask questions, stay curious, suggest activities, suggest ways of being together that that can help the group evolve and not just the individual.
I love that. And I think I really appreciate you bringing that up, like talking about it, the fact that you do focus on this, because it does make me realize, like, you know, it's fine. It's all well and good to focus on our self-care. And that's great, because I think of Stephen Covey, how he would talk about communities, and he would say, like, first, it's like, get yourself in order, right? Like look after yourself, and then your immediate family, the people around you, and then it kind of ripples out then to the community at large. And so there comes a time when, okay, yes, I've worked on my own self-care and I'm doing all these great things for my family, but we need to look up and out and look within the context of, yeah, our community, our workplace, the schools, all the institutions that we're in. It's really important that we do that. So I appreciate you bringing that perspective and highlighting the importance of it, because we really, like, community is so important. And yet I feel like, do you feel like we've lost a sense of community? Like there's this, you know, they talk about there's so much isolation and like a loneliness epidemic. And what's your take on that? Do you think we've lost some of that?
I mean, it's certainly different in a generation. Right, our parents and our parents' parents, whose lives were so hyper local in their communities, in the places where their feet were, actually, right? Mm-hmm. Those were the relationships that were prioritized. And now, a generation later, we're living in such a global landscape where, you know, a lot of people have relationships with people that they never physically meet, you know, who, you know, are across the world in different places, or even if they are down the street, it's still a virtual interaction and not a high touch experience. So yes, mm-hmm. I think we have changed so much in just a generation, and we have to be really careful about that, because given our, you know, living in such a AI kind of generated world experience. You just have to look at science fiction, works of science fiction, to see where we might head if we're not careful about prioritizing the relationships that are within our reach, our neighbors, our you know, even the loose ties that we have with the dry cleaner or the other clerks and places that we might find ourselves in our world, right? There might be loose ties, but they're still important relationships. Those are still human beings there. Mm-hmm. And I notice for some time now, and it just happened again yesterday, I think it was, where I'm walking down the street and, you know, the person that's walking, opposite me is not even acknowledging that, not saying hello, not looking up from their device or whatever it is that's distracting them from being present. And, you know, I get really annoyed in those moments, like, hello, you know, sometimes yeah. I'm a little, I'm not forceful, but I'm definitely trying to make a moment. Hello, yes. Good morning. Yes. You know, that's how I find myself with people who are not inclined, just to kind of give it a little bit extra.
Yeah. Okay. I love that you're saying this, because I think I grew up in a small town. And so there, like, you always say hi to the person. Now, times have changed too, since I lived there, but you always say hi to the person, especially if you're on the same side of the sidewalk. You would acknowledge them. You would say hello. And then when I moved to Toronto, everybody thought I was a weirdo because I was saying hello to strangers. And people like me, and especially being a young woman, it's like, no, you're not supposed to do that here. So why do you think you're like that? That you, like, because I think we're cut from the same cloth. I want to say hi to people too, right? Maybe because we're in positive psychology. I don't know. But why do you think you're like that too? I appreciate that you are.
I just am aware of what seems to be a drastic change in just a generation around that. And that doesn't mean I'm always doing it myself. You know, I get distracted. Certainly I'm driven to distraction. You know, I get lost in my phone, certainly, like even when I'm walking my dog in my neighborhood. So it's not about perfection to me. I think, you know, I like to be reminded too, when I'm out of the zone, you know, in another place, in another dimension, not where my feet are, but like, so I think we all need to remind each other. And that's the blessing of being human, is that we have each other happier together, right? That's the Shears theme, that we need each other for our happiness, you know, that we're social creatures. Without each other, we're nothing. And so I'm a twin too. I have a twin sister. I've always been kind of connected from the womb with another human. I think that, you know, to answer your question, why am I like this? I think that's part of it, is that I've had the lived experience of always being connected with somebody else.
Yes. Yeah, that's really beautiful. I can see that, how that would be. And also kind of in that same vein, like, what is it, what got you interested in, like, there's all these different areas in positive psychology, right? That there's so many areas we can focus on, which is one of the reasons I love positive psychology. So why is it that you think you're the one that is out there? I know you're not the only one, but I mean, when people think of community well-being and social emotional leadership and that connection with people, often, you know, if I was talking to people, I'm sure your name would come up. Like, why do you, like, what is it about community well-being that, you know, why is that important to you? And why have you chosen that as an area that you like to focus on?
The first thing that comes to mind is because I gravitate towards complex situations, I think. I there's something about the complexity of it that intrigues me, you know, not just working with one person. Let's work with a group of people. Like, I love being with work teams, for example, and doing team building and like being a part of the social fabric. There's something in knitting the social fabric that I find fascinating and interesting and important as a unit of analysis, even, right? It's like, let's look at the group, you know, versus the individuals in the group. We've evolved as social creatures. We've evolved as group social creatures, right? In evolutionary psychology, and biology, it's about the survival of the fittest being the group, not the individual, right? Mm. And so our ancestors are groupish and hive creatures, as are we, you know. And I feel like I've always felt a bit like the Johnny Appleseed of positive psychology, kind of dropping some seeds, introducing people to the subject. And you know this probably from your own experience, you know, that you've always been drawn towards the positive psychology kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh, wow, it's a thing. Oh, that this is what it's called, right? And it's so freeing to like, mm-hmm. to be welcomed into the fold of positive psych. So I love being that Johnny Appleseed. I love spreading the word of the science of well-being and the practice and inviting people in as groups, because I think that's really where change happens. It's like I can make a lot of individual level changes, but then I show up to my family. I show up to my work team. I show up to all sorts of places where I'm in community with other people. And then I have to be different there too. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just in love with the idea that we need each other and our communal spaces are so, so ripe for some positive psychology interventions just to make them a little bit more alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm so glad that you're right. It is complex. Like there's a lot to it. And yeah, we need people that are willing to, like, you're actually very brave to face that, because it's really complicated. And maybe you can tell us a bit, because I think the work that you do, maybe for our listeners, like to hear the types of things that you're doing in communities. My hope is that people listening, one, will be inspired by the work you're doing. Two, will maybe think, yeah, like it's not just about self-care, it is other care. And what is it that maybe we can all be doing as individuals to, we're all parts of so many different communities, so what can we be doing? And third, I know you're going to talk to us a little bit about, you know, opportunities to do this type of work in the world. So maybe you can give an example. Like I know I read a little bit, but maybe there's one in particular you want to talk about, just to kind of bring it to life so people can understand what we're talking about when you're looking at a complex community sort of situation and how you're making a difference and the work that you're doing in the world, and how applied positive psychology is helping community well-being.
The work that I've been doing in the world for about 15 years now, with communities has remained the same over the course of 15 years. It's their capacity building interventions. And by that, I mean, bring people together, teach them the principles, the theories, and the ways of applying those theories of positive psychology in their lives personally, right? There is that personal piece that's really important. And then collectively, there's the relational piece among the people in the cohort. And so the way that I teach positive psychology in community is I actually go to the community and gather a group of social emotional leaders within that community to do the training and development process, where we coach people through a curriculum. And we have different names, different types of curriculum, different lengths of curriculum. But the one that we use mostly in communities is the Certificate of Applied Positive Psychology, the CAP program, through the Wellbeing Lab. And it's an 8-month learning journey. We say it's a personal and professional development experience where you come and you get both. You get the opportunity to dig deeper and reach higher personally, and then apply that professionally. And so our cohorts are very diverse across sector representation. So we have people from the health world, we have people from education, we have people from industry, we have people from nonprofit leadership, we have people that are just, but concerned citizens, people who are members of the community, who are volunteers or retirees or people who don't necessarily have so much a professional identity, but a calling to be a part of this work. And the work is very at first personal, and then it's applying it relationally and collaboratively among the members of that, of the learning cohort, because we do a lot of pay it forward challenges in the class where we invite people to try on things within their spheres of influence at home, to do a family tree of strengths, for example, or in a workplace to lead a well-being conversation as a lunch and learn, so we scaffold that learning. We provide resources for people to be able to be those influential leaders in those spaces. The CAP class ends with an impact project where people are designing their own way forward, and so they identify a demographic that they want to be able to influence and work with. And it's then becomes a really an array of projects out of the cohort, working with the developmentally disabled, working with the homeless, working with youth in schools or seniors at the senior center, and in a community. So we've done this in several places, in Michigan, in Eastern Michigan, a place called Midland, which is a county in Eastern Michigan. In Antelope Valley, a place in northern Los Angeles County. We're about to start our third CAP cohort in the past 3 years. And so it's in these places where the impact projects get executed simultaneously. And that creates a nice ripple effect of well-being through a community when, you know, there's a group of people over here working with middle school girls in a lunchtime well-being club, and some are over here working with the Parks and Rec Department on a on a rock project, an art rock project that leaves well-being messages and QR codes on rocks in different parks.
Oh, even with QR codes, I've seen the ones with the painted on, but I didn't know what's the QR code. What happens?
Well, it just takes them some additional information, takes them to some more learning, a deeper dive into the science of well-being, to our survey and some QR codes, our well-being survey, where people get to use the PERMA well-being survey. And so just to kind of create a ripple effect through the community and those types of impact projects are coordinated among the cohort and create a nice kind of ripple through the community. Some of them then become their own things. For example, one project in Antelope Valley 2 years ago was to create a welcome home for Vietnam veterans. There's a big veteran community in this part of California. And so they created at first an event to create a more positive welcome home experience for those Vietnam veterans who they felt weren't properly thanked with gratitude back in the 1970s. So they re-simulated the experience of coming home and had an event with a parade and other ways of infusing positive psychology into the event. And they've since then become their own 501c3 nonprofit and have run two more of the welcome home events past the impact project from the CAP class. So some of them start to have more sustainable legs as projects. And really what we're trying to do, Brenda, is help people increase their ability and their motivation for helping other people care for their well-being.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I am just like, I'm amazed by talk about, that's an apt name, like impact projects, talking about the impact they've had and talk about being happier together and all the things that, and just listening, all the things people can do in community and just listening, like I feel so inspired and it makes you think, wow, like what could I be doing in my community? And, you know, there's, and I hope that, for those of you listening, I hope you're sitting there like maybe thinking, oh, like I'd like to go do a lunch and learn well-being for middle girls, or maybe there's something in your community that like it's so inspiring to hear, because often we think, oh, I want to help or I want to do something, but I don't really know how. And so I think you've just given some beautiful examples of projects that that people can take part in, or people can spearhead or get involved with as part of what you're doing. I just think that's beautiful. And I feel emotional hearing about the Vietnam war vets getting the welcome home all these years later. That must have been so emotional. There must have been, like, I could imagine the tears and just, wow, it must have been something else.
Yeah, a great range of human emotions at an event like that, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in positive psychology, in the way that we teach it anyway, is really to remind people that that's what life is about. It's not about being all positive, right? It is about having a full range of a human emotional experience, and increasing the part of the capacity building is to increase our emotional intelligence, and to, you know, is to learn ways of expressing the range of human feelings and all of those types of skill-based things that take practice. And so that's where the intervention, we call it, a lot of people don't like that word, but the intervention is to teach people positive psychology and invite them to teach other people positive psychology, and in turn create a systemized way of distributing what we know about human well-being and flourishing within the community.
Beautiful. So first you teach them positive psychology. So they learn that. Then there's the impact project where they have an impact on their community. And then is there another piece after that, or is that that's the main, what you mean, sort of the end goal of the project is this impact that they're, this ripple effect in the community?
It's not the end goal. The end goal is to form and norm a well-being coalition for the region.
What type of well-being coalition?
A well-being coalition, a collaborative of practitioners and leaders to stay connected as social emotional leaders within that community. So another community that we've worked with is in Midland, Michigan, and they've, 5 years later, they have built their well-being coalition. They just hired people this past year in roles to keep the community engaged, engagement roles and content creation roles. So they're like building this vehicle, you know, building the vehicle as they're driving it, essentially, to have consistent presence in the community as a resource for people. That's not a once and done kind of thing. So that's the larger game. It takes a bit of time for that to happen. It takes time. It takes leadership. It takes resources. It takes a lot of things beyond the CAP class. But that's our long game. Our long hope for these communities is that they have that vehicle that they're building together, and that vehicle supports not just the change agents, but the people that those people are supporting.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love hearing about this, because I think so often in the world, Lewis, maybe not in your world, because you see a problem and you're like, how do I solve it? But, you know, you hear about all these issues, and a lot of times, you know, we're talking about them, right? Oh, well, you and I, before we hopped on, talking about youth, mental health, right? And the happiness of young people. And oftentimes people talk, oh yeah, there's that problem like we have to address, or, you know, what are we going to do about all these youth with mental health issues? But then that's where the conversation kind of ends and we just walk away all being worried and concerned. What I love about what you're talking about, it's like you're saying, okay, yes, we are worried about these community issues. Now let's do something about them. And even on a small scale, like let's chip away at it. Let's do something. I that's what I'm feeling when I hear you talk about all this, that I think too often we just think, oh, or that's such a big issue, it's too big to tackle. So you're giving a way through, like a way for people to say, okay, like, where can we where can we at least start to solve or help some of the community issues that we're seeing in here in 2024?
Yeah, thank you for pointing that out. I think that kind of agency, right, to act and to have a contribution is also really good for our own well-being, right? That level of service and that level of giving altruistically of oneself, one's gifts, one's strengths, one's contribution is not just good for the community's well-being, but it's also good for my own. So there's that kind of win-win paradigm that we love so much.
Absolutely. That's what we love. And it's so true. It's like a feedback cycle, right? Or like it comes back to you, right? You give out and all of this makes people that, and part of what we're talking about with being happier together is feeling that sense of belonging to something bigger than ourselves, right? That sense of purpose. And my goodness, you know, when you talk about, and I know you've written, you've co-authored a book and you talk about kindness, and we can talk about the little acts of kindness and like the saying hello to the person on the sidewalk, right? Those little acts of kindness. And yet I love here too, where we're talking about how do you even take that like up quite a few notches and look at it on a different scale? I want to go back to, because I remember, and I've always been so curious about this, Lewis, you talked about the family tree of strengths. And before I met you, I heard about you and I heard about this family tree of strengths that you had done. And I'm so excited to finally get to be able to talk to you about it. And I know my listeners, I know their ears perked up when you said that. And we're all sitting there going, what is a family tree of strengths? Because I know the women in my community are probably like going, what? What is that? What is he talking about? Can you tell us more about that? Because I've seen pictures. Like, I think this was through the CAP program I did. I think I heard about you and you've done this thing. And I remember thinking, how did he manage this with his family? Because, you know, our families are always the last. Like, I teach a lot of people about positive psychology, but my family, like, I don't even think half of them know what I do. So can you tell us more about this?
My friend Adele says, our families are our greatest learning labs, you know, where we can take what we're learning. So this actually, what you're referring to is my capstone impact project from my MAP degree back in 2008, when I gathered my entire extended family for a field day, actually, a day of games and fun. And as part of that field day, in preparation, I had asked them to take the VIA signature strengths survey. And you could post that into the show notes for people. But, you know, we had an artifact of everyone's top five strengths. There were 30 people on the list. My aunts, uncles, cousins, sisters, you know, all of them. And then we built a family tree of strength where each branch is one of the virtue categories and each sub branch is one of the 24 character strengths. And we used post-it notes and we just kind of had fun kind of building the tree of everyone's strengths. And it's, you know, I've done this with work teams too and other groups where you on a tree get to see the distribution of our collective character strengths. And it's always quite full, the tree, once you distribute across a group, right? So in that way, you know, a family is its own community, right? Where you can think of the collective strengths and who you might lean on when you need something in particular, who, you know, someone else who has gratitude, maybe when you're struggling to find what you're thankful for, or someone who has creativity when you're struggling to work through a challenge, or someone who has perseverance when you're struggling to stick to something that you're wanting to attend to. So we can lean on each other, you know, and we don't have to carry all of the burden on ourselves. So to see a family tree of strengths reminds you of the distribution of strength across the group.
I love it. And so did your family all go, yay, Lewis has this activity for us?
Well, Yeah, they did. To be quite honest, I mean, it's a long time now that I've done that with my family. But they did. They were supportive. It was my graduate classwork, right? So that's what they were really helping me with. And
yes,
I've helped a lot of other families do this through the years too, where it's not part of their graduate cap classwork. It's part of the cap class. It's part of their learning journey, right? So you're in the cap class, your positive psychology certification, and it's part of the learning journey. So people are more inclined to want to help, you know, when it's an assignment and that you're doing it for your schooling. But no, my family was great. They were all game. They were so grateful to see their strengths, to name their strengths. You know, I remember my Aunt Marianne saying, yeah, this sounds like me, all of these things, you know, she was so delighted at the time to be introduced to the tool and then to have the experience. And I'm so grateful that they were game, because it was fun and it was meaningful and it was something that we'll always have together aside from the other things we do together, which is often around eating or celebrating or honoring a holiday or something together. It was just slightly different. And our brains love novelty. So invite your family and Brenda. Let them try it out.
Yes, I will. And maybe we should say, like, this is, you know, your assignment listening to the She Flourishes podcast. If you want to rope your family, and maybe I shouldn't use the word rope your family into it. But, you know, if you want to get your family to participate, say, oh, I was listening to this podcast and I hear it's really great. And then, you know, DM me and let me know and I'll share with Lewis. You know, let us know how it went with your family tree of strengths, because I think that's just a beautiful, if we're thinking about community, like, start, you know, we talk so much on the She Flourishes podcast about your self-care. I love this, you know, the ripple effect to your family and then your community in the workplace and the communities that we live in. It's so, so wonderful. Oh my goodness. I can't believe that we're getting close to the end of our time talking here together, Lewis. I want to ask you a little bit more about the work that I know you're going to be doing some work, potentially. I know you live in California, but you're going to potentially be doing some work in Canada. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Is that under wraps, or can we hear a little bit about that?
You can hear a little bit about it. The Wellbeing Lab is in partnership with Louisa Jewell, which many of your listeners will know Louisa. A practitioner of positive psychology, the founder and president of the Canadian Positive Psychology Association. So we are embarking on a partnership to create happier cities across Canada. And the primary goal is to launch one of these CAP classes, a Certificate of Applied Positive Psychology classes, first in the Greater Toronto area. So we're getting that cohort. We'll be coming together this year, hopefully. Right now, we're seeking out corporate sponsors to help provide scholarships for community leaders to participate in this program. And so perhaps some of your listeners might be out there thinking, ooh, you know, my corporation or might be interested in something like that. You know, it's great social responsibility, kind of leadership, and sharing some of the costs to put together a program like this. And so our goal will be to start in the Greater Toronto area with one group to go through starting later this year, most probably in the fall to begin and finishing up in the spring, the program of 2025. And Louisa will facilitate. She'll have a co-facilitator, and we'll convene about 50 people into that cohort who can learn positive psychology, have a shared learning experience, which is really where the magic is at, is in the relationships among the people that come to the class, and then be coached into their own impact projects towards the end and executing those projects together in the spring of 2025. So yeah, it's exciting. Love I'm it. Excited. I'll spend some more time in Canada with you all. And so this is part of our goal this year is to scale out into some other cities. So yeah. We're gearing up for Greater Toronto Area to begin.
I love it. So if people listening, if you're listening and you're thinking, this is exciting, I want to know more about it, and your company might be interested, or you know, you want to be part of that, what's the best way to connect with you or Louisa about that?
Yeah, reach out to me. We can have a conversation. Okay. I'm okay. Lewis at thewellbeinglab.com. We have a two-pager that if you want to share with your listeners, you're welcome to, which explains the initiative and what we're looking for. But happy to talk to anybody who would be interested in participating or helping sponsor. Sponsors first, and then we'll work on right. getting the participants.
Okay. So sponsors. So if your company or maybe some sort of government sponsorship, or you know of any organizations that would be interested in that type of thing, we're wanting to cast the net out there and let people know about it. So definitely get in touch with Lewis if you can help with sponsorship for that. I'm excited, and I'm sure people listening, like, just think, right? If we can have that happening in Toronto, that's going to help our community and the ripple effect that can have. I think that's amazing. And Lewis, I always ask, I need to say, if you are going to be hanging out more in Canada and Toronto, I know, and anyone who's not from here will say Toronto, but if I can just give you a little tip that if you want people to think you're a local, we say Toronto. We kind of roll that, you know, Toronto. No
Toronto.
T. Yeah, Toronto. Oh, yeah. Say Toronto. It like that. Yeah.
Toronto.
Yeah, you got
okay,
it.
Okay, thank you so much.
Then they're going to know.
That's actually really helpful.
Yeah. Then you're going to sound like you're one of us.
Toronto. Okay. I got to practice. I will practice. Yeah. Thank you. I thought you were going to say, let's get together when you're here. And I would say, okay, let's do that too.
Yeah. Well, let's do that too, for sure. When you come to Toronto, we'll get Toronto. Together. And so one question I ask one final question I ask all my guests is, what's one thing you most recommend that I usually say that women do to flourish in their lives, but when I bring male guests on, I usually say, what's one thing you most recommend that people can do to flourish in their lives? So do you have any words of wisdom?
I could say so many things here, but I think one of the foundational things is exercise. Without physical movement, right, we're missing a part of our innate energy. And so to prioritize physical movement, I'd love to do it in the morning. I love to get out into the sun in the morning, you know, just kind of being in that embodied place of moving the body. And I love the research that shows that people who not exercising is equivalent to taking a depressant as a pill. Like, who would take a depressant, right? And so not exercising is equivalent to that. So get out there. We all have our own limits, right? And we all have our own boundaries. Not that they can't be pushed. So don't do it alone. You know, get a partner, get a friend. I love going to the Orange Theory. It's a franchise gym that they just tell me what to do, and I follow the instructions. Mm-hmm.
So shout out to Orange Theory. Maybe they'll be one of the sponsors for the project.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. Well, we have Orange Theory here too, so that's great. Yeah, definitely. I love that. Thank you for that. And that's always a good reminder. And yeah, that I remember hearing that in the CAT program about not exercising being like taking a depressant. And I think that's when you think about it that way, it's like, oh my goodness, like, why not go out and do any form of exercise? And even better with a friend, because we're here talking about being happier together and about community. So I just want to say, Lewis, thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing all of this incredible knowledge and wisdom that you have around community well-being. I feel so inspired, and I know everyone who listens to this is going to be inspired as well. So thank you so much for being here today. Thanks for listening to the She Flourishes podcast. I hope this episode has inspired you to keep on creating the flourishing life you deserve. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend who would benefit from it. And remember to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast wherever you're listening. To learn more about how you can live a flourishing life, head over to brendajasmine.com or follow me on Instagram at _brendajasmine. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode. In the meantime, keep on sharing your gifts with the world. See you soon.